We're live and we're local. This is a Juno afternoon on Wednesday, April 11th, 2018. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. On today's show, I'll be joined by Annie Bartholomew to preview Friday's KXLL Showcase at the Hangar Ballroom. Educators Brandy Scott and Josh Jackson and student Marigold Lindoff will highlight the Tlingit Culture, Language, and Literacy Program. Melissa Meredith and Catherine Fritsch will preview the Juno Skating Club's spring show, Beyond the Stars, and we'll hear about Wednesday night's, that's tonight, Alaska Design Forum Lecture 10x10. Those interviews, national native news, bird note music, and more right here on a Juno afternoon. Quick look at weather, partly sunny, highs in the mid-50s. Take your radio and go outside. National Native News is next.
This is National Native News. I'm Hannah Colton, in for Antonia Gonzalez. Members of the Yurok tribe in Northern California headed to federal court Wednesday to attend a hearing that could affect salmon in the Klamath River. KIEM-TV reports a federal district court judge will decide whether the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation has to release more water this spring and summer in order to protect juvenile salmon from a deadly pathogen. Upstream farmers and other users oppose the court-mandated water release. Yurok Tribal Chairman Thomas P. O'Rourke said in a press release that salmon are an essential part of the tribe's way of life and that the current drought makes them vulnerable to crisis-level disease rates. Wednesday's hearing is the latest in a decade-long dispute over Klamath River water. The Yurok tribe canceled commercial fishing last year due to declining king salmon populations. The Lac du Flambeau Band of Lake Superior Chippewa is the latest Wisconsin tribe to file a lawsuit against the makers and distributors of opioid prescription drugs. Glenn Moberg reports.
The 77-page lawsuit was filed in federal court against both drug manufacturers and stores like Walmart, Walgreens, and CVS that fill prescriptions. The suit alleges that the Lac du Flambeau tribe has suffered significant costs for medical treatment, child welfare, foster care, education, addiction therapy, and the care of babies born addicted. Attorney Andrew Adams says close-knit tribal communities are hit hard when individual members get hooked.
The products are so addictive, and for a tribal community, when an individual is impacted, it has a cascading effect. Then it impacts all the people around them, and then it impacts the health of the tribal community itself.
Opioid lawsuits have also been filed by the Lac-Da-Ré Band, the Menominee Tribe, and the St. Croix Chippewa. Glenn Moberg, Wisconsin Public Radio News.
Recently, tribes in Oklahoma, the Dakotas, and Wyoming have also filed lawsuits related to opioid drug addiction. Lawmakers in Maine have rejected the latest effort to move toward tribal gaming development. The State House on Monday narrowly voted down a proposal to ask the state Supreme Court for advice on whether tribes could open casinos without state approval. Representative Henry John Baer of the Holton Band of Maliseet Indians argued that tribal casino revenues would benefit both the state economy and the well-being of tribal members.
We have health issues, education issues, the budget doesn't cover it. We have housing shortages. We need jobs, and we want to pay our own way. That's the simple response to questions to us. Why do you want to do this? Why gaming? It will raise critical revenues that will not otherwise be generated in the remote areas where we're located.
The issue goes back to a 1987 U.S. Supreme Court decision from California that held tribes could operate casinos if the state where their reservation is located allows them. Representative Baer's attempt to take the matter to Maine's highest court died in the state house. Maine already has two private casinos. Numerous attempts to approve tribal gaming facilities have failed in recent years. As some in the U.S. recognize Equal Pay Day, advocates are pointing out that wage disparities are even greater for Native Americans and other women of color. April 10th this year symbolically marked when a woman would have earned what a man earned in 2017. But the National Women's Law Center noted that for Native women, Equal Pay Day isn't until the end of September. Stephanie Poston owns a public relations firm based on the Sandia Pueblo in New Mexico. On Native America Calling Tuesday, she acknowledged the pay gap and encouraged Native women to stick to what they believe their work is worth.
To know your worth and stand by it with confidence. As Native people, we have a very unique lens that we work from. You know, I worked for my tribe for 11 years. I learned so much and I'm so grateful for the opportunity. But it's really important that we, as Native women, know our worth and stand by it.
Native American women earn just 57 cents for every dollar earned by their white male counterparts. For National Native News, I'm Hannah Colton.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by the law offices of Sanofsky Chambers, Saxe, Miller, and Monkman, a national tribal rights law firm with offices in Washington, D.C., New Mexico, California, and Alaska, and online at www.sanofsky.com.
Support from AmeriCorps Vista, whose members fight against poverty while earning money for college and gaining skills, with rewarding service opportunities around the country and info at AmeriCorps.gov/Vista.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
You're tuned in to a Juno Afternoon. I'm your Wednesday host, Shelley Delaney, and my first guest is our own Annie Bartholomew, also one of my favorite guests, a.k.a. Annie B. Good. Great to see you today.
Thanks so much for having me, Shelley.
How's your Folk Fest going so far?
It is going. The Folk Festival's in full swing. We just filmed Foghorn String Band out on the docks, and it's just getting started.
That's amazing. Was that a live video to social media, or can we?
It's going
to
be on social media soon.
Okay.
We just, it's so gorgeous out. We thought, why not take it to the docks, film these guys on the water? They just got into town and playing tomorrow night at the Rendezvous.
Excellent. Well, there's a lot going on. We don't have time to talk about everything.
You can check it all out on our nightlife guide,
yeah,
which is on social media. I compiled all the people playing most of the places downtown, so you can't go wrong. It's Folk Fest.
I know, and good job on the nightlife guide. I think we all look forward to it can get a little overwhelming, so when the guide comes out, I always check it because that's where the good stuff is.
Definitely.
And you yourself are a performer. You told me you're not going to perform at Folk Fest, but you are, in fact, performing this week.
Yeah, tonight, this hump day listening room at the Gold Town, Taylor Vidick's putting together, doing some Carter Family tunes with my friend Rasha and a new fiddle player. So, you know, in that spirit of it's Folk Fest, let's put a band together last minute, take it to the people. There is no other festival like this, and I love it so much and just so grateful to be a part of it and to be able to throw really cool showcase events during it.
Yeah.
Which is why I'm here.
I know. Are you ready for Friday?
I am very ready for Friday.
Hey, tell us what's happening.
So we got year three of the KXLL Showcase, which is kind of in the style of festivals like South by Southwest, where you get together a bunch of artists you really want to show off to your friends. And Folk Festival is really awesome for folk music, but there's a lot of other really cool music happening in Juneau. So we thought we'd show off what makes Southeast Southeast to all the people visiting. So this year, we're doing it at the Hangar Ballroom. They're on, again, as our sponsors and our home for the showcase. Alaska Music One's doing the sound. It kicks off at 8 o'clock at the Hangar Ballroom. We got our headliners, Amish Robots, kind of a Southeast Alaska supergroup now based out of Seattle. DJ Alternative, Patrick Troll, is kind of one of the many fellows in it. Alex Nelson, Juno Guy, is another musician playing in that band, and they're releasing an EP this Friday. They're also taking over KXLL at 5 o'clock on Friday.
Amazing.
During regular Burger Church DJ Alternative Hours.
That's so perfect.
Yeah.
What a great idea.
We have so many cool people in town. Why not try and do it all?
Is there anywhere we can preview the Amish Robots? Can we find their music online anywhere?
They do have a Facebook page with some tunes there. So
okay,
that's the best source for it.
And then we can listen at 5 on Friday,
mm-hmm,
to KXLL.
I think it's going to get real goofy.
Indian Agent is going to be here, too. And
yeah,
that's two members of the band of Silver Jackson, and it's their new band.
Yeah, Nick Glannon, he's out carving the totem pole at Harborview Elementary School, and he's going to come do a set for us.
Cool. And then we've also got Christy Nami Erickson with Avery Stewart. What are they going to be doing? Do you think they'll perform their Tiny Desk contest submission?
I hope they perform it. Christy Nami Erickson, amazing poet. Avery Stewart, killer guitarist. Mm-hmm. They've been working together on some new material and poems that they're going to be showcasing there. So I just felt like, why not include poetry?
Oh,
that's,
yeah,
music
for
too.
Sure. Well, I watched this their Tiny Desk concert submission, and it's so good. So I'd love to see that live. And anything else they want to throw at us is going to be awesome, too.
Right. And Avery Stewart's got an album coming out later this spring. So he's going to be playing some tunes from that with a full band later on in the night.
Which is cool because I've never seen him perform with his full band.
Yeah,
I've only seen him solo.
He's really good at looping.
Yes, he
very
is.
Smooth voice. I don't know why he lives in Juneau. Let's hope he sticks around.
Don't give him any ideas. All right, and then we've got the very Alaska-famous Taylor Vidick. She's amazing. Terrific vocalist, and she's duetting with Cody Russell, and I've seen Taylor perform a number of times. I don't believe I've ever seen Mr. Russell. Can you tell us a little bit about their sound together or his sound?
Yeah, Cody is another killer guitarist. He's from Sick himself. They're both playing music in Seattle right now, coming to Juneau just for the Folk Fest to show off.
That's terrific. Well, that's great. So that's where you don't want to miss it. Another reason you don't want to miss it.
Another reason you don't want to miss it. Queens.
Yep.
Capital
Queens
letters.
Is back.
10 lady singers. It's going to be amazing. I know what songs they're doing. They're going to be on the main stage tonight, so you should really see them there.
Cool.
But if you'd like to see it again, the KXL Showcase is going to be your place.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm really glad that they're back. I loved their sets last year. I saw them twice, and I'm really hoping for some new songs and looking forward to that
performance. Oh, there are new songs. I'm a little jealous
because you're not
they,
in it.
They asked me to be part of it. I'm like, I just don't have one of those voices. Like, no. I'm going to be dead weight. And then I heard what they were singing. It might be a Lady Medley from Oh Brother, Where Art Thou.
Oh, wow.
I'm just, spoiler alert.
Maybe. It might be. We don't know. We'll
may
have to
or may
to
not.
Find out. Now, hold the phone. This show on Friday is free.
Totally free.
That's amazing.
There's so many cool events happening in town, and we just really want to celebrate Juneau musicians. And you can feel free to come and go and come back. But there's just so much incredible music. We want to be part of it. And we want to share what we play on our station with all of Juneau.
Well, I'm really looking forward to it. The show is Friday the 13th at the Hangar Ballroom. Doors open at 8 p.m. and the music starts
right
also
at 8,
yeah, so that's pretty cool. And it's all curated by you, Annie Big Deal, Annie B. Thanks for being here today. And more importantly, thanks for curating this amazing event again this year. I am so looking forward to it.
Well, we couldn't do it without the support of Alaska Music One and the Hangar on the Wharf. So thank you to those guys, and we'll see you at the showcase.
Yeah, shout out to all of them. Have a great Folk Fest.
Earth don't turn like it used to before. The people don't celebrate the king anymore. It's been 8 months since our last world tour. Ready to escape, spread our wings and explore.
You're tuned into a Juneau Afternoon about 14 minutes after the hour, and my next guest is a surprise, Christy Chandler. She's one of our own staff here at KTOO, and she wants to tell everybody about something that's happening tomorrow night.
That would be Art Glasses. So I think you should all be pretty familiar with it now, but I'm hoping that the sunshine and Folk Fest and all of these things are inspiring you to come make a floral crown with us tomorrow with Deborah Clements from Martha's Flowers and Gifts. Cool. We'll be over at TK McGuire's. There's also going to be a photo booth so we can photograph you in your floral crown glory.
Good call on that.
Yes.
Because once you get those crowns on, you got to give people a chance to take their
picture.
And
I can think of no better way to like kind of celebrate the weather and Folk Fest by making a crown and then walking over to hear some music. It should be a really fun night. So we still have just a few tickets left, and you can get those at jahc.org.
Okay, so it's a relatively small class or event.
Yeah, they tend to be more intimate groups. Yeah, so this one is only 20. So we just have a few more seats left. And if we still have tickets left tomorrow, we'll be selling them at the door. So keep that in mind. If you just happen to be downtown, you can poke into TK Maguire's and we'll try to sneak you in if we can.
Are they using fresh flowers?
They are. This is like literally going to be like a floral, gorgeous crown. So
very natural.
Very natural. Very folk fest.
Very folky.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. What are some of the other details? Is there a cost associated?
There is. Tickets are $45, I believe. And also, if you're a parent and you want to bring your kid, we're letting parents and kids or any combination of coupledom. You can work on one crown if that is more conducive for you. If you don't really want to make your own, but you kind of want to learn, but maybe don't want to make the full investment, there is a separate ticket cost for that. And I think it's just an extra $10 to participate, and then you'll just work on one crown together.
Cool. Anything else included? Materials?
No, it's a no-host bar. They'll have some food specials going on at the time, so you can order while you're doing your art. And that's pretty much it. And then you can see the full schedule at jhc.org as well under the events tab. Just click on Art Glasses. We have one more coming up for the season, which will be with Patty Jopy, and we're really excited about it.
How have the other Art Glasses turned out so far?
Really great. We've had such fantastic folks participating who are really into it. And we've sold out pretty much of every single one of them. So we're just really, really excited about it. It's great to, you know, take folks from the community and have them work with a local artist and learn something new.
And proceeds go to our very own public
It's a collaboration station? Between the Juno Arts and Humanities Council and KTOO. So you're benefiting two nonprofits when you participate. So thank you.
Fantastic. All right, Christy, anything else? Oh, wait, one last question.
Yeah.
Can we see a picture of the floral crown anywhere online?
Oh, like a sample of it?
Yeah.
You know what? Let me see if I can track one down and I'll plop it into the Facebook event, which you can see either on the K2 page or the Jack page. And then be sure to check it out. I'm sure we will post tomorrow night during the event. So.
Brilliant.
Yes.
Okay. Well, thanks for being here, Christy.
Thanks, Shelley.
When we were younger, we thought everyone was on our side. Then we grew a little and romanticized the time. I saw flowers in your hair. See, it takes a boy to live, takes a man to pretend he was there. So then we grew a little and knew a lot. And now we demonstrated it to the cops and all the things we said. We were self-assured. 'Cause it's a long road to wisdom, but it's a short one to being ignored. Be in my eyes. Be in my heart. Be in my eyes.
Tickets are on sale now for the 2018 Juno Jazz and Classics Festival with events you know and love, including Strings at the Shrine, Puttin' on the Ritz, and this year, Jazz and Classics has added a classical brunch cruise. Tickets are available at the Jack, Hearthside Books, and online at jazzandclassics.org. This message brought to you by Juno Jazz and Classics.
You're tuned into a Juno Afternoon. I'm Shelley Delaney, and here with me in the studio is Brandy Scott, Josh Jackson, and Marigold Lindoff. Welcome to the show, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Brandy and Josh, you're both educators. Can you tell us where you teach?
I am the reading specialist for the TCLO program at Harborview.
Okay. And so what is that you teach exactly? Just reading and...
I work with any students within our program who have any struggles with reading. I do assessments on all the students throughout the school year to just know where they all are academically with reading. And then I coordinate with the teachers to support any kids who need extra help.
Cool. And how about you, Josh?
So I teach the K-1 classroom in TCLL.
And what does that involve?
Reading, writing, math, science standards across.
So TCLL is the Tlingit Culture, Language, and Literacy Program, and you're both heavily involved in it, it sounds like.
Correct.
And Marigold, where do you go to school?
I go to Harborview.
And what grade are you in?
Second.
All right. Well, thanks for being here. I imagine you're involved in this program as well, aren't you?
Yes.
Okay. Well, we're going to talk all about it. So first of all, what is the Tlingit Culture, and Language, and Literacy, Tlingit Culture, Language, and Literacy Program?
I guess I can speak to that. It's a free optional program. It's open to all students across the district. Whether you live in Ok Bay or you live in Douglas, you can attend our program. Within the program, we have three multi-age classrooms. We have a K-1, a 2-3, and a 4-5. We have a daily language lesson every day that's taught by a language teacher, and we have an elder that works with our students daily. It incorporates a lot of our cultural knowledge that we have within our culture, and we work closely with the elders to get that knowledge and to build upon what we know and what the students know. So we work closely with elders. We work closely within the team that we have.
It's described as a school within a school. It's physically located at Harborview Elementary, but students can come from all over to participate. Yeah. How is that formatted? Is it the students coming from a different school? Do they just come for part of the time and go back to their regular school?
No, it's a full day, full inclusion program. So it's very special that students outside of the boundary of Harborview can attend, but one of the caveats is that their parents would have to provide transportation. There is before and after school care through the Rally program that students could take advantage of if they were going to Harborview for the TCLL program.
So what are some of the things that the program provides to participants? And maybe Marigold can talk a little bit about what she's learned and what she likes about the program.
I like how we get to do, like, every morning on Mondays, we get to go and sing and dance, and we get to listen to one of our elders. And I like that we get to go on a lot of field trips, and there's a lot of special activities that we get to do that everyone else in the school doesn't get to go do.
What are some of the field trips that you like to go on?
Well, when I was in kindergarten, we got to go camping.
Cool.
So that was really fun. And we got to go to, like, Kit Diet Pack, and we got to go Hudson Bay tea picking and stuff like that.
And you've been a part of the program for a few years now.
Yeah.
Well, that's a great testimonial. Now, we can all find out more about the Tlingit Culture, Language, and Literacy Program pretty soon because there's an open house coming up. Can you give me the details on that?
So we've invited families in for our Monday morning meeting that Marigold just spoke of. We have, from the get-go, when they walk in the doors at 8 a.m., they'll meet us in the gym for the meeting, and we practice our singing and dancing. And from there, we sit and meet with our elder, who is David Katzik, and we get to listen to him. Speak to us either on the stories that tie into what we're learning about within our program or if he has, like, a story with a moral that he wants to teach to our kids. And from there, we'll move into our classrooms, and they're able to see a few classrooms and a language lesson in likely my classroom during that time.
What are the goals of TCLL? What's the vision? What do you hope to achieve with this program?
I think through the program was founded by Kitty Eddy, who was an Alaskan Native educator within the Juneau School District, one of the first teachers to be hired and work within the school district. And It was created in order to instill the cultural values in Alaskan Native students and to teach other students growing up in Juneau on Tlingit land to teach them more about the culture as well and to just instill a level of respect for the culture that comes from this place where we live, where we all live. So that's how it began, and it has really become a very powerful force in language revitalization. I think everyone knows that young children their minds are like sponges, and they can pick up a second language very easily at that time, at that early age. And so with our work with Jessica Chester and elders and other language teachers in the community, we're just trying to instill that knowledge of the language and knowledge of the culture with young children in the Juneau School District, because it is in danger right now.
How long has the program been around?
Kitty started the program, I believe, in 2000, so it's going on 18 years now.
18 years, wow.
Yes.
And it sounds like it's been pretty successful so far.
Yes.
That's great. Well, thanks for coming and educating me on the program. I don't have any children. I didn't know anything about it. It sounds fantastic. Is there anything else you'd like to share with our audience while you're here?
I did want to just share the names of the teachers who work along with Josh and I.
Absolutely.
So this year we have Mr. Rocchietti teaching second and third grade, Ms. Michelle Martin teaching fourth and fifth grade. Ms. Jessica Chester is the Tlingit language teacher. We have Patty McNeil working as our cultural specialist right now. And Katie Pittman is our special education teacher K through 5 with Pat Minnick as her support teacher. And we also have another para named Taylor Larson who helps kids with another language intervention throughout the day.
Great. Marigold, is there anything else you want to say about why you like the program or why people in Juneau should come to the open house?
Not really.
Okay, you said it all. You said enough. And Josh, how about you? Any last words there?
I think that we captured it. I enjoy working in the program. I feel connected to what I'm doing and what I'm teaching. It's truly an honor to come to work every day and to get to work with these wonderful children. So I highly encourage people to come in and see what we do.
Great. It's so nice to talk to people who believe in what they do. So thanks for doing what you do. And thanks for being here today. The open house is April 16th, 8 to 10 a.m. at Harborview Elementary School, free and open to the public. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Thank you.
bird note. It's spring, and for many birds, a time to look their best to attract a new mate. This American goldfinch has recently molted. Its old worn-down feathers have fallen out, and new ones have grown in. The male is now a vivid yellow with a striking black back and wings. When goldfinches molt in the fall, they lose these brightly colored feathers. That way, they may hang around all winter unnoticed. Their winter camouflage helps them blend in with the drab background of the season. In spring, they molt again, making a dramatic change into their stunning breeding plumage. And the goldfinch isn't the only bird to make this surprising transition. The willow ptarmigan, a bird of the northern latitudes, is rusty brown in summer, blending in with the tundra where it nests. In the fall, its plumage changes to winter white, matching the landscape. Some gulls, like these laughing gulls, and also the Bonaparte's gull, add dapper black or brown hoods for the breeding season. Summer, fall, winter, or spring, we're glad you listened to Bird Note.
KTOO Public Media with the Juno Arts and Humanities Council invite you to April's Art Classes. Pretend for a moment you are enjoying a midsummer's night and create a beautiful floral head wreath with the magical Deborah of Martha's Flowers and Gifts. April 12th from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. at TK McGuire's. All supplies included, no host bar, and food available for purchase. Tickets on sale now at jahc.org.
It's about 28 minutes to the top of the hour. You're listening to a Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. And my next guests are all here from the Juno Skating Club. Welcome to the show, Melissa Meredith and Catherine Fritsch. Any relation there?
Yes. You guys are my daughters, my twin daughters.
Cool. Thanks for being here. So as I mentioned, you're here from the Juno Skating Club. So could you tell us a little bit about what the Juno Skating Club is and what you guys do?
Sure. Our mission at the Juno Skating Club is teaching Juno to skate. So we offer 4 sessions of Learn to Skate lessons every year, starting in September. And we just finished our 4th session just about a week ago. And we have Learn to Skate lessons for everyone from ages 4 and 5 on up through adults. So the sky's the limit there as far as age is concerned.
Wow. When are lessons usually held?
Usually we hold lessons Friday nights, 6:30 to 7:30, and then Saturdays, 11:45 to 12:45.
And is that just through the winter, fall and the winter?
There are 4 sessions a year, so fall and winter. And the rink actually closes after Sunday is the last day until August.
Well, you're going to go out with a bang. You guys are all 3 in the Juno Skating Club. And how long have you all been skating?
Kath and I have been skating for, 10 years?
11, I think.
Yeah, and how about you?
Actually, I started skating after they did. I skated as a kid, pond skating a little bit, but I got a little tired of sitting around being cold, so I decided to take some lessons myself, and now I teach the youngest kids, the 4 and 5-year-olds.
Oh, that's fantastic. And do you 2 teach as well?
Yes.
All right. So the Juno Skating Club will be presenting their spring show, your spring show, this Saturday. And you said this is an annual event?
It is. So this is actually our 15th show. So I was just talking today to Pam Leary, who is our figure skating coordinator and one of the founders of the skating club. And I couldn't remember if it was 14th or 15th show. It is our 15th show. And it's funny, that first show had 7 numbers in it, and we have 28 numbers this year. And so it's pretty exciting the way we've grown over the last 15 years.
And were you there for the first one?
I was not. We moved here in 2006. So this will be Meredith and Catherine's 11th show that they've been in. So they haven't been there from the beginning, but I think probably some of the longest.
Yeah, you guys are the old pros there. And the show is called Beyond the Stars. How did you come up with that name?
One of the coaches, Leah, came up with that name. I don't know exactly how she came up with it, though.
That's okay. It's a great name, and I just imagine it sort of like Dancing with the Stars, but on ice.
It's all space-themed. Everything is space-themed this year.
Cool. Galaxies and planets and stars.
Exactly.
That makes sense. Well, what kind of performances will we see at Beyond the Stars?
So there's going to be some learn to skate numbers, group numbers, and there's some soloists, duets, and then Keegan Messing, the Olympian, is going to do a few numbers too.
And we've
really?
Also, yeah, we also have three synchronized skating teams. Team Forget Me Not, Team Fireweed, and Team Avalanche will all be performing.
And what do the team skating performances look like?
The synchronized skating?
Yeah, synchronized skating.
It's basically a bunch of skaters just skating in formations and all skating together to a piece of music.
Wow. And you said there are how many skaters in the lineup this year?
We have 99 skaters this year. It's the largest number we've ever had. It's super exciting. We have everybody from four-year-olds on up through adults that would probably – we're not going to say how old we are, so
– will you yourself be performing?
I will be leading the group of tots onto the ice. So I'm not going to be doing any other numbers this year, but I will be out there with the tots and skating with them.
All right. Well, how about you two? You two are going to be performing. Can you tell us a little bit about what you'll be doing?
We're each going to be doing a solo. And then we are both on Team Forget Me Not, and we're going to be in one of the group numbers as well.
That sounds pretty exciting. Are you both ready?
Yeah, I think so.
Thanks.
You're practicing a lot?
Yes.
Yeah. Cool. Well, you've got lots of experience, so do you get nervous? Do you get stage fright before you go out on the ice?
Just a little bit.
Yeah, a little.
You know, this is purely a showcase. There's no competition, no prizes, anything like that.
That's
yeah,
right.
No.
Great. Just for the public, for us to come and enjoy all the hard work you guys have been doing, everything you've been working on. When and where will this be held?
So Treadwell Ice Arena over on Douglas, and it will be Saturday the 14th. We have two shows, one at 3 o'clock for the matinee, and then we have a 7 o'clock evening show.
Great. And do we need tickets?
Yes, we do need tickets for the show.
Where can we get those?
We have our tickets right now on sale at the Jack and Hearthside, and they are $12 for adults and $7 for ages 4 to 12. The little kids are free. Those ticket prices are the pre-sale price, so at the door you can also get tickets, but they'll go up to $15 for adults and $8 for kids.
And where can we get more information about the performance or about the Juno Skating Club?
On our website, we have www.junoskatingclub.org, and that lists out all kinds of our lesson schedule in the fall. As I said, the rink is getting ready to close, so that information will be posted sometime late in the summer, early fall, when our next set of scheduled lessons is. But it's a great place to find some information about skating and just take a look at what the club offers. And we also are on Facebook as well.
Great. All right. Well, thank you all for being here. Is there anything else that you'd like to add or mention about the Juno Skating Club, about the performance this weekend that I forgot to ask you?
No, I think that covers it. I mean, we've had a great year this year. We had so many Learn to Skate kids taking lessons from us. And it's exciting to watch all of those younger kids as they move up through all the different skills. And Juno Skating Club is not just about figure skating either. I want to make sure people know that we also help prepare kids for hockey as well, so they can take Learn to Skate lessons from us and prepare either for figure skating, hockey, or just recreational skating, just getting out there and having fun.
Well, it sounds like a great resource here in the community. I know ice skating is super popular, hockey especially. So that's great that you guys are doing that. Thanks for doing what you do. And good luck this weekend. The spring showcase, Beyond the Stars, is this Saturday, April 14th at Treadwell Arena on Douglas. Matinee at 3, evening show is at 7. Get your tickets in advance or at the door. Anything else?
Nope, that's it. Thanks so much for having us.
Thank you for being here.
Is it anything and everything you offer? Or do you feel it all?
nothing new to me. You can bring a bullet, bring a sword, bring a morgue, but you can't bring the truth to me. You and all your expectations, I don't even want your congratulations. I recognize your false confidence and calculated promises all in your conversation. I hate people that feel entitled. Look at me crazy cause I ain't invite you. Oh, you important, you the moral to the story. You endorsing motherfucker, I don't even like you. Corrupt a man's heart with a gift. That's how you find out who you're dealing with. A smart percentage you I'm building with. I want the credit if I'm losing or I'm winning. On my mama, that's the real shit.
Let's talk about love.
Get away from me. If you do, I won't move. I ain't just cry for no reason. I ain't just pray for no reason. I give thanks for the day, for the hours, and another way, another life breathing. I did it all cause I feel good. I wouldn't do it all if I feel bad. Better live your life. We're running out of time. Let's talk about
Friday the 13th, join Excellent Radio for the KXLL Folk Fest Showcase at the Hangar Ballroom, presenting six acts with Southeast Roots, featuring Indian Agent, Christine Ami Erickson, Avery Stewart, Queens, Taylor and Cody, and your headliners, the Amish Robots. Music starts at 8 o'clock, Friday night at the Hangar Ballroom, 21 and over for this free event. Sponsored by Alaska Music One and Hangar on the Wharf.
You're tuned into a Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, about 17 minutes to the top of the hour. And my final guests today are the founders of 10 by 10 Studio. Welcome to the show, Maura Rockcastle and Ross Altheimer.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And also here with me is James Bibb, representing the Alaska Design Forum and this lecture series entitled Automata. Could you tell us a little bit about the Design Forum and the lecture series, please, James?
Yeah, the Design Forum, it's been in Alaska for about 25 years, and it was a group of designers and architects throughout the state that really wanted to get a little more conversation about design throughout the state. And we really dovetailed onto a wonderful lecture series out of University of Washington, just to get exposure to the state of Alaska. So it was a young group of designers and architects that had an idea about inviting folks that do design worldwide and have them bring them to the state. So this is our 25th year. So we're doing Automata, which is about technology, a bit of robotics, about how that integrates into design. And I think this is our third lecture discussion this year, and we expect to have two more this year.
Well, all the guests so far have been fantastic.
Yes,
I am a huge fan of the Design Forum. And luckily, they all seem to come through on Wednesdays, which is my day to host the show. So I get to meet everybody and talk to them and ask all those sort of behind-the-scenes questions. So Maura and Ross, you're both here as part of the Design Forum Lecture Series. Your presentation is tonight at 6 p.m. right here in at 360 North. And from what I understand, you're both landscape architects. So can you tell us a bit about what that is and what you do?
Sure. Yeah, we are
based out of Minneapolis, Minnesota. We started our practice 3 years ago, and we both had about 12 to 15 years of experience before we started the practice together, doing a wide range of work. And we worked for very different kinds of practices. So I had been doing a lot of public work with larger clients, cities, municipalities, institutions, agencies in primarily the East Coast. So projects like Times Square reconstruction and the High Line, larger infrastructure, public space projects.
And I've been working on sort of a range of stuff from sort of residential scale projects to cultural institutions up to scale of master plans. I worked on the U.S. Capitol Complex, a master plan for them. Also some other sort of master plans for civic work as well. So it was actually a nice balance between the kinds of experience and project types that we'd worked on. And kind of also sort of the vision for the kind of firm. We'd worked at a lot of places that we'd learned from but didn't maybe want to repeat. And so I think we had some ideas. We do have some ideas about the kind of practice we want to create, the kind of change that we want to make.
You mentioned some really high-profile projects there, Times Square, mm-hmm. the Capitol Complex. What was it like to work on projects like that?
It's incredible. I mean, I think that's why people go to landscape architecture school. You have a bigger sort of agency to change our built environment than people realize, I think, about landscape architecture, and that landscape architects more and more are starting to lead projects because they have ability to sort of zoom out and understand systems, ecological, water-based, development, economic, sort of larger scale systems coming together, and how to begin to organize those through sort of a lens of landscape. And of course, hand in hand, collaboratively with many other disciplines, engineers and architects, other kinds of economic consultants.
I mean, I think we're really lucky to work on the projects that we're working on now. Had the opportunity to work on some of the projects that we mentioned, and you know, we really are also passionate, I think, around projects within working with in communities and also public space. It's kind of like the core, I think, for both of us. So working in projects where, you know, that assembling big teams, working through complex problems that actually the public can occupy, it's pretty amazing. And especially our places that, you know, we all sort of know and love.
I can only imagine how it feels to transform a public space like that, to work with the land and the buildings and all the structural elements that you mentioned. So all of that led up to founding 10 by 10 Studio. How long have you been around as a studio or as a firm?
3 years. It was our birthday about a week ago. We could say today is our birthday.
Cool. Happy birthday,
Aries. If you want to say anything.
And what sort of projects is 10 by 10 spearheading right now?
We have a pretty big range. We have a couple smaller projects, residential projects, and a couple library projects. We're doing the new Fayetteville Public Library in Arkansas, two projects in Oklahoma, Norman, Oklahoma, main branch library, and a small sort of neighborhood branch library. We're working on a historic Fort Snelling at Pedote, which is a fort on the confluence of the Mississippi and Minnesota rivers in Minneapolis, which is a sort of creation story for the Dakota Native American community. And it's a partnership between the Minnesota Historical Society and the Dakota Community Council to design this sort of new visitor center and landscape that tells all of the stories of that site, not just the military story.
We're also working on a project in St. Paul called the Rondo Commemorative Plaza. That was it's for a client who began, I think, about 30 years ago when their community was separated by the building of I-94 through St. Paul, the prominent African-American community that was divided. So they got a $200,000 sort of apology from the city of St. Paul to rebuild a plaza and to bring the community that was divided sort of back together. And we're also working on a wonderful project in Omaha called the Tri-Faith Commons. It's a project for a temple, a church, and a Muslim place of prayer. It's a 40-acre campus. It's anticipated to be a pilgrimage site. This is the first ever of its kind in the States and actually in the world. There's really not much like it. So you hear from – we're working on a big range of projects, and actually the projects we're talking about tonight are even another sort of tangent of projects that we're working on that are sort of more experimentation and installation-based.
And what will you be covering in your talk tonight, without too many spoilers?
We're talking about four projects. The project that Ross and I, and it's sort of chronological order from our very first competition together to make sure we liked working together, which
still works.
called Automata, which is the name also of the lecture series. We presume how Alaska Design Forum found us. It's for a small kiosk on the Lake Michigan lakefront in Chicago. Never got built, but it was a fun competition that started 10 by 10. We'll be talking about Gallaudet University, which is one of the nation's only deaf and hard of hearing focused university in Washington, D.C., and Weather Report and Orbicles, which are two projects that we worked collaboratively with MinLab out of the University of Minnesota, which is a collective of architects, landscape architects, and computer scientists.
Wow. And are you based in the Midwest there in Chicago?
Did
you
in Minneapolis.
In Minneapolis? Yeah. Okay. Sorry if you told me that already.
No problem.
Went in one ear and out the other. So it sounds like it's going to relate pretty well to the theme of Automata. Is there anything more you want to say about that, how your work and the theme fit together?
Yeah, well, I think the idea about implementation or the inclusion of advanced technologies. So robotics, maybe not, but in this case, for a couple of our projects, we're really looking at the inclusion of data into the sort of design process. In all the projects, we're really looking at one of the things that we're really interested in is sort of how we create experiences through phenomena or amplify sort of phenomena. So using some of these technologies to integrate those within the projects to really amplify the experience or connection of people to one another or to the wind, to sound, to presence things that are maybe there but sort of unseen. So that's one of the ways in which it relates to the themes.
How did you come up with the name 10 by 10?
Do you know what a Gunter's chain is?
No, I can't say I do.
It's an old school U.S. Land Survey unit of measure. It's 100 links and 10 chains by 10 chains is 1 acre of space. So we were interested. We just did a lot of research into a lot of different tangents. The one that sort of continued to emerge for us was this idea of control on natural systems, measuring landscapes that are wild and vertical and crazy, and how people thought to order that, and scalelessness also, sort of thinking about, units 10 by 10 inches to 10 by 10 hectares and being able to sort of abstract scale in a way. We also liked sort of the equality of something by something, 10 by 10, an equal partnership between, the two of us.
I think also, even the, creating a space for a practice. So even the most ubiquitous box of like a 10 by 10, box, that there, something could fit in there. But we wanted something, we tried maybe all-timer rock castle all-timer, and that was sort of a mouthful. So we didn't want to go there. But we also, one of the ways we practiced too is we wanted to be something that where it was shared authorship and collective ownership of the work. And didn't want to name the firm after ourselves, but actually to leave room for something, bigger to sort of emerge.
Smart. And I like how the concept is sort of visually presented on your website, which I really enjoyed. You can mention what the URL is. I found it just by Googling 10 by 10.
Sure. It's www.tenxtenstudio.com.
Yeah, and a lot of squares.
A lot of 10 by 10s.
It looks great. Actually, one project that caught my eye wasn't one of these big ones. It was a residential garden, and it's a private client, and it's a personal, maybe like a backyard garden, and it looked amazing. I wanted to be in that space so much.
Is it the one with the wood bridge and the birch trees, or was it?
It looked like some people sitting in kind of a sunken square with a fire
rendering
pit in the
for
middle.
That. Yeah, yeah, this
and
small
out in the sun, sipping drinks.
Yeah. This small, sort of urban Minneapolis client let us put a giant birch forest and a sunken quarry in their backyard. It's pretty incredible to have clients like that.
It was beautiful.
You'll have to come to Minneapolis, and then we can all go sit in the sunken sunken quarry.
I would love
forest.
To. Minneapolis is one of my favorite cities. It's such a great place to be. So it's nice that you guys get to be based there. But let's talk about Alaska. Is your first time visiting Alaska?
This is my second.
My first.
Your first time?
Yeah.
Is it both your first time in Juneau, or had you been to Juneau before?
Yeah, absolutely.
Never in Juneau.
Juneau's our favorite.
You came on a very nice day. Did you encounter anything here in Alaska, either related to your work or otherwise, that you had never seen before?
Yes.
Maura's nodding.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Where to start?
Yeah. My uncle took me out to the Portage Glacier the first day. We were here on Sunday, and I skied across the lake with him, and we watched a huge chunk of the glacier calve into the lake, and it created a huge roll on the ice, which you think and believe to be flat, should be flat, shouldn't move underneath you, and the whole thing rolled about 5 feet underneath us, and I thought that was the end of my life.
That's
would
have created
cool
10 by.
How about you, Ross?
Well, I have to say I'm really taken by Juneau, and I grew up kind of in and on the water, near the water. And so just its relationship to the water here, we went to the glacier, went to go see the bay that starts.
The Yakarek.
Oh, gosh, thank you.
Yeah.
And then back to downtown. And it's just, just all the landscapes that are here, kind of packed into one place. Mm-hmm. And then we drove up Mount Robert.
Yeah, uptown through the Perseverance Trailhead.
So just all the range of landscapes that are really within a short, a short drive of one another adjacent on it. It's just fantastic.
Yeah. Well, if you have a little bit of extra time, you should go over to Douglas or out the road.
Yeah,
it's a small area. It doesn't take a lot of time to go see it. But as you mentioned, there's a lot there to see. Well, good. I'm glad you're having a positive experience here in Alaska.
Super positive.
Beautiful.
Yeah, good.
All right, James, I'm going to pivot back to you. Could you review the details of the talk tonight, when and where and how to get tickets?
Well, it's at 360 North, so right here at the K2 station downstairs. It starts at 6, and we really want to invite people out. I think these lecture series are incredible. But we know it's sunshine and the Folk Fest, so we're going to – the plug is, well, when the sun's about to go down a little bit, it's a good time to – go inside maybe a little bit, and it's right before the 7 o'clock opening of the Folk Fest. So I say it's perfect timing to come down to the lecture tonight.
I'm glad you mentioned all that. And we are located downtown at 360 Egan Drive. So very close proximity to the Folk Fest if you want to pack it all in tonight.
Yeah.
Great. Well, thank you both for being here today, and good luck with the lecture tonight. Is there anything else you want to add or mention about the design forum, about the talk, about your firm before we wrap up?
Just a huge thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah, and we have two more lecture series, like I mentioned, and so next year there's another series, but go online to Alaska Design Forum, and you can do a search on that, and we have a lot more information on what we do. So
great. All right. Well, thanks for tuning in to a Juneau Afternoon today. Tomorrow, Julie Copen's host, and she will speak with UAS's Marnie Kaler about Off to College Night, and the PFLAG Juneau Pride Chorus, Larray Jones, and the new choral director, Kathleen Wayne, will highlight their next concert and auction. And we'll hear from the guest dance caller, Susan Michaels, for the Alaska Folk Festival. And Nancy DeCherney will outline this weekend's happenings with Arts Up. There's so much to do. Thanks for listening to Juneau Afternoon.